to the Night Theater.
My name is Samson. You won't know me. Might I have a word?
I beg your pardon.
My name is Samson. You won't know me. Might I have a word? My name is Samson. You won't know me. Might I have a word?
We present Alan Bedell and Patrick Barr with Catherine Dolan and Marjorie Mars in Unlawful Occasions by Henry Cecil, adapted by the author from his new novel of the same name. Unlawful Occasions.
This is Jane Colesworth speaking. No, I'm afraid my husband isn't back from court yet. Oh, just a moment, that may be him. No, I'm so sorry. He usually comes home about this time. Can I get him to ring you? Yes, certainly. Temple Bar, 1301. Very well. Goodbye. Oh, wait. Hello? Oh, Brian, darling, you've just missed someone. Temple Bar, 1301.
Oh, that'll be old Borrowdale about the Baker case. He'll keep for a moment. How are you, darling?
Darling, I still can't get used to having so much of you to myself. It's wonderful. Do you know that since you took Silk, I believe I've been the happiest woman in England. And when you're a judge, we'll have even more time.
When I'm a judge?
But you will be. Everyone says so.
Well, they say it about a lot of other people, too.
Oh, no, but quite seriously, you are in the running, aren't you?
Quite seriously? I don't know. It's possible if I don't blot my copybook in the next couple of years.
Blot your copybook? How could you?
Run off with the judge's wife or something.
Oh, I'm not frightened. I'm not even jealous of the woman who lives above your chambers.
Well, you ought to be. She's an absolute dazzler. I had a drink there this evening and her husband was out. He usually is, as far as I can see. I've only met him twice.
What's he like?
Edward Verney. Doesn't seem a bad chap, but, well, they've only been there a bare 6 months. They're not permanent, you'll be glad to hear. A furnished sublet.
What's so attractive about Margaret Verney?
Well, I don't know. She just is. If I were single, I'd be round there knocking at her door.
But you're not. And anyway, you've got that phone call to make.
Margaret Verney, my name is Samson. You won't know me. Might I have a word?
Oh, come in.
Nice place you have here. And what a lovely view. Your husband home?
How did you know I was married?
So he's out.
But really, Mr.
Samson. Shouldn't be too difficult to remember. Verne is a much less common name.
Mr. Samson, would you kindly tell me why you wish to see me? If it's insurance, I'm afraid we've all we want.
But how can you be so certain you don't know what I have to offer?
Then it is insurance.
In a way, yes.
I'm extremely sorry. I know how depressing it must be for you, but I assure you, we have no spare funds to take out another policy, even if we wanted to.
No spare funds, you say? Well, that all depends, doesn't it? Even people on the breadline can eat less bread if there's something they need more. And looking around this charming flat and these charming surroundings, I should hardly say that you were on the breadline. No, Mrs. Verney, you have plenty of spare funds if you need them.
I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I can't help you.
But you're wrong, you can. If £100 would save your life, you could find it, couldn't you?
There's no point in discussing the matter. I've said all I have to say.
But if it would save your life, you could find it, couldn't you? We've all got something we could do without to save our lives. People even risk their bodies to save their lives, jumping out of burning houses, for instance.
Good morning, Mr. Samson. I hate scenes, but unless you leave at once, I shall telephone for someone to put you up.
I'm sure you wouldn't talk like that if your house were alight and a fireman climbed up a ladder and offered to carry you down.
Are you going?
I'm the fireman. Please don't get burnt alive. Your husband would be most distressed, and I'm sure you'd hate to hurt him. Wonderful thing, a happy marriage. Now, don't spoil it. There are not so many of them. How did you like the Fisherman's Nook Hotel?
What did you say?
Pretty place. The room overlooking the lake is the best. Don't tell your husband I called. We'll keep it as a surprise, shall we? I'll come and see you again in a day or two, see if I can interest you in one of my policies. Good morning, Mrs. Verney. Samson, the name, in case you forget. No. Don't bother to see me out.
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Verney.
Could I possibly see Mr. Colesworth?
I'm afraid he's just starting a conference.
I'm most awfully sorry to trouble him, but it's terribly urgent.
Well, I'll tell him you're here, Mrs. Verney.
What is it, Digby?
Excuse me, gentlemen. Excuse me, sir. Mrs. Verney's here.
Mrs. Verney?
She seems very agitated and asked if she could see you.
Agitated? What the... All right, ask her to wait. I'll see her when Mr. Baker goes.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell her.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Baker. Well, how are you?
None the better for seeing you, sir, I'm afraid.
Oh, please don't apologize.
I wasn't.
I gather from Mr. Borrowdale here that you don't like the law, Mr. Baker.
I do not.
Well, it's far from perfect, but there'd be a jungle without it. Wouldn't there, Mr. Borrowdale?
Indeed, sir.
And, Mr. Baker, where would you be if you couldn't sue Mr. Potter?
I'd have bashed him, and he's bigger than me.
Exactly. You ought to be grateful to the law for helping you to get what you couldn't get by bashing.
Then you think I'll win all right?
If you behave yourself in court tomorrow, I think you will. But if you start calling the judge a cantankerous old so-and-so, you'll end up in jail instead.
Oh, I hate all these bowing and scraping and wigs and gowns. He's only a man, same as me.
Mr. Borrowdale, I wish you could get our client to concentrate on his case for the moment.
Indeed, sir.
Look, Mr. Baker, you indulge in politics or philosophy or whatever you like when the case is over. Incidentally, I ought to warn you that you're coming before a difficult judge anyway. He's got a phobia, too. He hates gambling.
Why shouldn't one gamble?
Why shouldn't one wear a wig and gown? but then let's go into that. This judge won't care whether you win or lose. It's lucky we're a jury, so don't be surprised if you see me clash with him early on. It may get us the sympathy of the jury.
Clash? Well, how do you mean?
Do what you shouldn't do. You'll see. Now, there are one or two things I want to ask you about your first interview with Mr. Potter.
Mr. Carlsworth will see you now, Mrs. Verney. Mrs. Verney, sir.
Come in, Margaret. What can I do for you?
I'm awfully sorry to trouble you.
That's all right. How can I help?
Well, it seems so unfair, my taking advantage of our living just above you.
Not at all. What's the trouble?
Forgive my asking this, but everything I say will be in confidence, won't it?
Well, of course. Unless you want advice as to how to commit a crime.
It certainly isn't that. It's the other way around, if anything. But you wouldn't mention it. I mean, even to my husband.
I see.
I'm afraid it's embarrassing you.
Well, it is a bit. If there's trouble between you, I shouldn't want to take sides.
Of course. No, there isn't exactly trouble between us. It's to prevent it that I really came to see you.
All right, I'll take a chance. I won't tell your husband.
Brian, I'm terrified. I feel I must have help at once, and I think only a lawyer can give it.
Well, tell me. Come along, I've given you my word.
Well, I know it sounds melodramatic, but it's true. I'm being blackmailed.
Who by and why?
A man who said his name's Samson has just told me, in effect, that unless I pay him, he'll tell my husband of something that happened at a hotel called the Fisherman's Nook.
And what is it that you think he knows?
Well, you can guess, I suppose. While Edward was abroad, I did make a fool of myself and go to that hotel, and I wasn't alone.
A man?
But of course. Really, I'm sorry. Naturally, you've got to know everything. Only I felt that if it had been my Aunt Barbara I went with, I shouldn't be asking for help now.
No, I quite understand. Don't upset yourself. And, of course, your husband knows nothing about it.
No, he doesn't.
Well, surely that's the simple answer to your problem. Tell him.
It isn't, you see. If it had been, I shouldn't have bothered you.
Is he such a jealous person, then?
Oh, no, not particularly. I mean, if I'd killed him when he came back from abroad, I'm sure it would have been quite all right. But I just felt I couldn't tell him then. He came back, carrying loads of flowers and presents. It's just wonderful to be with you again, you know. I've thought of you almost every minute I've been away. Now, tell me all you've been doing. Well, as a matter of fact, I went away for a weekend with a man. You see, I just couldn't then. And after that, I kept putting it off, and now it's too late.
I'm sure it isn't. You're a happily married couple, and you say he's not a particularly jealous type. He's sure to forgive you.
Well, that would have been the case.
Well, why isn't it?
The other day, he asked me to divorce him.
What? I thought you were so happy together.
Oh, so we are, and will be, I'm sure, but he suddenly got an absurd infatuation for a much younger woman. Oh, he'll get over it, I know, and of course I'd forgive him. But if he heard of my weekend now, he'd divorce me. She'd make him. So you see, don't you, that I simply can't tell him.
Ah, now, let me think what other courses are open to you. You could go to the police, of course.
But I can't possibly. Edward would be bound to hear of it. All this Mrs. X stuff may be all right for the general public, but I'll bet Mr. X usually knows all about it. There'd have to be traps set for the man, wouldn't there? And then I'd have to go to the courts and give evidence. And we're known here in the temple. Even if no one recognized me, I'd have to explain to Edward where I was, and I couldn't keep making excuses successfully all the time.
Yes, I see the difficulty. There is another method, but it would mean you're paying the man something. Could you raise £100?
Oh, not without Edward knowing all about it. But how would it help if I did raise £100?
Well, you see, if this man agreed not to molest you any more in return for a sum of money, you could get an injunction against him if he broke his word. And if he broke the injunction, he'd be sent to prison.
And what about the publicity?
With any luck, there wouldn't be any. It could all be done privately. The method isn't bound to be successful, but it usually is. What's the most you could raise without exciting suspicion?
Well, I suppose I might manage £25 over a few weeks, but not a penny more.
Well, that's one possibility, then, if he'll take as little. The other thing is to do nothing at all.
But then he'll tell Edward.
Not necessarily. Blackmailers normally want money, not revenge. Once he tells your husband, he's no hold over you. He's nothing to sell to you.
But I just can't do nothing.
Well, try to find out how much he'll take to make the agreement I mentioned. Then if you can raise the sum, get him to sign. I'll draft something for you, if you like.
Oh, Brian, that would be most kind.
I'll give it to you tomorrow morning.
Oh, thank you.
No, it'll have to be afternoon. I'm opening a case to the jury in the morning. Members of the jury, once a week for a majority of the weeks in the year, a large number of people in this country, including, I expect, some of you, have a genuine hope that the whole of their lives may be changed. That instead of sharing the kitchen and bathroom with their next-door neighbors or their mothers-in-law, they will have a house of their own. That instead of wondering whether they can find the next installment due on the car, they will own a car outright. That they may perhaps be able to take a trip round the world. This hope springs solely from the possibility that they have sent in a winning line in a football pool. Nearly every week, one person at least receives a big prize. Perhaps it'll be me next time, they say. The fact that they're much more likely to be run over in the street doesn't lessen the hope.
What on earth has all this got to do with the case, Mr. Cullsworth?
If your lordship will allow me to continue my address to the jury, your lordship will be enlightened on the matter.
I've read the pleadings, and all this flummery appears to me to be wholly irrelevant.
The jury have not had your lordship's advantage of reading the pleadings.
And why don't you tell the jury what is in them instead of pouring out this frothy nonsense? You want to write an article for the press on the modern desire for obtaining something for
nothing. At the moment, I am hoping to be allowed to address the jury and not to pursue the journalistic activities your lordship is good enough to suggest.
Well, suppose you tell the jury what the case is about.
With your lordship's permission, we'll continue to do so. Members of the jury, the facts of this case are simple. My client, Mr. Baker, and the defendant, Mr. Potter, agreed to go in for a football pool together. The coupon was sent in Mr. Potter's name. It won £30,000. The defendant now completely denies the agreement and claims to keep all the money himself. I'll call Mr. Baker.
Take the book in your right hand and repeat the words on the card.
And that, my lord, was the reason. I suggested we put Doncaster to draw away and Chelsea at home.
Have I got to learn how these beastly things work?
It is simple, my lord. If you keep off the perms...
Keep off the perms? What on earth does that mean?
Permutations, my lord, but your lordship won't have to bother about them for the purposes of this case.
Oh, well, that's something. I suppose it's too much to hope that the majority of the jury know as little as I do about these things. Yes, Mr. Foreman, what is it you want?
Forgive me, my lord, but I'm very fond of the pools. I go in each week and I enjoy it. I don't expect to win, but there's always a chance, and I enjoy filling in the coupon.
Sit down and behave yourself.
As another member of the jury, my lord, may I say that I think the pool's an absolute disgrace.
You sit down, too. Mr. Hopkins, do you wish to cross-examine?
If you please, my lord. Mr. Baker, you have said that after these proceedings had started, you saw my client in a public house and that he admitted to you that he had agreed to go in for the pool with you.
He did.
And when did you first tell anyone that my client made his admission?
Well, how should I know the date? I don't keep a diary like some of you blokes.
Don't be rude to counsel.
Oh, sorry, my lord. He seems to want to make out I'm telling a pack of lies.
No one's trying to make out you're telling a pack of lies. You're just being asked a very simple question.
Simple, eh? I bet he couldn't tell me when he last saw his grandmother.
Behave yourself. No one expects you to be able to say the exact date.
Well, then why did he ask it, my lord?
I didn't ask the exact date.
You said when, didn't you? And if that isn't asking the date, I don't know what is.
I didn't ask the exact date.
Well, you asked the date, and what's the difference? If it was on the 12th and I said the 13th, you'd be on me like a ton of bricks, 2 tons. And I'd get no compensation either. Act of God, you'd call it, or such like.
Pull yourself together, Mr. Baker. All Mr. Hopkins wants to know is about when you told someone else of the defendant's admission.
Well, if that's all he wants, why didn't he say so? But I suppose I ought to know. I'm in the law courts where things don't mean what they sound like. He asked me when I told anyone, and when I says I don't know the date, he tells me he don't want to know it. He just will ask me, how's your father? Well, I can answer that. That's all right. I ain't got one. Now, I suppose he'll say that's impossible. Well, all I can say is you find him, then I can't.
Mr. Baker, you may be enjoying yourself in the witness box.
Oh, well, I like that enjoying myself. I never wanted to come here.
Don't interrupt. I'm not going to allow you to play the fool anymore. Anyway, if you didn't want to come here, why did you sue the defendant?
Because he wouldn't pay me, Lord. If he'd paid, I wouldn't have come here.
He says he doesn't owe the money.
Well, of course he does. He's a liar.
Well, then, if he's a liar, just you tell me, about when did you tell anyone at all, about the defendant's admission?
Well, if you'd like me to make up a date, I can do that all right. Let's say a week last Tuesday.
Are you being funny?
No, my lord. Come to think of it, it was a week last Tuesday.
Why didn't you say so before?
Well, I forgot. You got me all tied up like that. I couldn't tell if today was Thursday or Christmas.
It's Wednesday, as a matter of fact.
Ah, there you are, then. What did I say?
Anyway, you know that last Tuesday week you told someone of the defendant's admission.
Well, what of it?
Whom did you tell?
Well, if you want to know, it was him, Mr. Cullsworth.
Mm-hmm. You told Mr. Cullsworth?
My lord?
Yes, Mr. Cullsworth.
I'm afraid that I must tell your lordship that neither my instructing solicitor nor I know anything of this matter.
Yeah. Whose side are you on?
Although Mr. Cullsworth is representing you, it is no part of his duty to corroborate a lie.
Who said it's a lie? Why take his word instead of mine?
Is there any possibility of mistake, Mr. Cullsworth?
None, I'm afraid, my lord.
I say the old blooming thing's a mistake. £200 I've paid him, and what's he do? In this case, my lad, I appear to me client who's a stinking liar.
Mr. Baker, control yourself. If you don't immediately apologize, I shall deal with you for contempt of court.
Well, I'm sorry, my lord, but I pay this here bloke to speak up for me, and all he does is to send me down the line.
Mr. Baker, you will not refer to learned counsel in that way. He is only doing his duty.
That's all very fine, my lord, but who's to say who's right and who's wrong? I've sworn on oath to tell the truth, and I've told it. Why believe him instead of me? He hasn't even taken an oath.
It is customary to accept the word of counsel.
Oh, yes, sir, my lord. How do you know he hasn't slipped up this time? Everyone's all right till you find out about him.
I'm not going to argue with you any more. The question is, Mr. Cullsworth, what is to be done?
My lord, I obviously no longer have the confidence of my client, and with your lordship's leave, I and my learned junior will retire from the case.
Well, what happens to me, then?
You be quiet. It seems to me, Mr. Cullsworth, that this case will have to be retried.
But what happens to the money I've paid? Do I get it back?
You will have to discuss that with your solicitors.
And where do we go from here?
What do you say, Mr. Hopkins? I don't see how this trial can go on now, do you?
I see the difficulty, my lord. But I ask that the costs of this abortive trial should be paid by the plaintiff in any event.
What do you say, Mr. Cullsworth?
Well, my lord, if I'm retiring from the case, it doesn't seem to me that I can properly argue that matter before your lordship.
Well, someone's got to.
I'm the counsel now, am I? Well, I'm worth a darn sight more than the £200 I paid him. A taxi driver would be prosecuted if he threw you out before he finished the journey, unless his engine failed. His engine hasn't failed.
I've a very good mind to send you to prison for your continued insolence.
Might as well, my lord. Perhaps I'll meet a lawyer there.
Very well. You leave me no alternative. Mr. Baker, if you choose to make a full and proper apology to the court, I will only send you to prison for a fortnight.
I may want longer than a fortnight, my lord. There ain't so many lawyers inside as there ought to be. Give me time to wait for him.
I will certainly give you a longer time in prison.
I can see that leniency does not pay in your case. You will go to prison for 3 months.
Thank you, my lord. Perhaps you'll be there by then.
Take him away before he says any more. I shall now make it 6 months.
Take me away before he says any more.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Verney. Samson is still the name. May I come in? Well, say if you'd rather I didn't. Ah, thank you. You're paler than when I first met you. I do hope it's nothing to do with me.
If I am, you know it is.
Well, let's hope I shan't have to come much more often. How's your husband?
Oh, please leave my husband out of this.
Well, if I took my cue from you, I would, wouldn't I? He was kept out of the... Well, good heavens, I've forgotten the name of the hotel. The one by the lake. You know. What was the name? Well, I've got it on the tip of my tongue. Oh, do tell me. Do you know, it's horrible when you can't think of a word. Now, do put me out of my agony.
You know perfectly well, but how do you know?
How do I know? Now, that's a question, isn't it? Well, there's an organization.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just like some of the stores or newspapers have an inquiry department. You can ring up and they'll give you the answer to almost everything. Date of the death of William Pitt, Jr., how to make a chicken curry, when's the last train to Glasgow, you know the idea.
I don't understand.
Well, there's an organization which buys and sells information of a different kind. For instance, suppose you were a waitress in a hotel. I've got it. The Fisherman's Nook, for instance. And you happen to discover a couple staying there together who weren't married. You could sell the information to the people I mentioned. They'll want proof, mind you. It's no good just saying two people stayed at the Fisherman's Nook unless you can prove it.
How much do you want for this information?
Well, let me think. I bought it in a mixed lot, paid £150. Yes, averaging out, I'd say your little piece cost me about a tenner. Well, I work on 1,000% profit. I know it sounds a lot, but you see, some of the stuff is a dead loss, so you've got to pay for the bad with the good. Your arithmetic good enough to work it out? 1,000% on £10? Not difficult, really.
But I couldn't pay anything like £100.
Oh, what a pity. Well, I mustn't waste your time anymore. Just in case you change your mind, I'll come along again in a week or so. Goodbye for the present. Oh, I'll leave this for your husband.
Why can't you leave me alone? Oh, Brian, you're here. He's been again. Oh, it was awful. He left this for Edward.
A brochure of the Fisherman's Nook. He's turning on the heat. How long do you think your husband's infatuation with the girl will last?
One just can't tell.
Why hasn't he left you?
Well, for one thing, she won't have him unless there's a divorce. That's her way of putting the pressure on.
I'll come up and talk it over in about half an hour. Oh,
Brian, you are good. I don't know what I should do without you.
I wish I could do more. Anything to stop blackmail.
Mr. Coulsworth's clerk?
Yes?
My name is Samson. You won't know me. I wonder if I could have a word with Mr. Coulsworth.
Are you a friend of his, sir?
No, a stranger, as a matter of fact. But perhaps you'd ask him if he'd be prepared to see me.
Very well, sir. Excuse me.
What is it, Digby?
There's a man to see you.
What's he want?
He didn't say.
Well, ask him. What name did he give?
Samuel or something.
Not Samson, by any chance?
Yes, that was it. Oh, how did you know?
Tell him I can only spare him a few minutes and show him in, please.
Very well, sir. But how did you guess his name?
Never mind. Show him in.
Mr. Coulsworth will see you for a few minutes, sir.
Thank you. How kind.
Mr. Sampson, sir.
Nice position you have here.
What is it you want to see me about?
Such a pleasant view and so quiet.
I'm afraid I haven't very much time.
But nor have I, as a matter of fact. Very good of you to see me.
Perhaps you'd tell me why you've come.
Well, to see you, of course. To see Brian Coulsworth, Esquire, QC.
Why?
It's a new experience. I like new experiences.
Why have you come to see me?
Look, I might answer that question if you'd answer this one. Why did you see me? I'm a complete stranger to you. I didn't state my business. You probably don't know anyone of my name. You can't usually see anyone in such circumstances. Why did you?
I wanted to know what you wanted.
Well, I want to know why you wanted to know what I wanted. Well, Mr. Coulsworth, why? Oh, well, I'm so sorry to have troubled you, but you have got a nice view through that window. At any rate, I've seen that. Oh, by the way, weren't you in the Moriarty case about 3 years ago? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, sir.
sir, Sir?
Yes, D.B.?
I have a message from Donald and McBean that they want to call you for the defense in that case of Baker, where you threw up the brief. They say they expect you'd prefer to have a subpoena. I said I'd ask you. You remember the case, sir? The chap who went to prison for contempt. The chap who said he told you about the defendant's admission when he hadn't.
Yes, I remember.
Well, the defendant wants you as a witness. There'll be questions of privilege, I suppose. But you'll have to be there, I imagine.
Yes, I suppose so.
Will you want a subpoena? I said I thought you would. You can't very well give evidence against your own client voluntarily.
Digby, do you think that man who called on me, Samson his name was, do you think he could be mixed up in that case at all?
How should I know, sir? I don't know anything about the man. You just told me to show him in when you heard his name. Are you feeling all right, sir?
I'm not feeling too good, as a matter of fact. I think I'll go home. Ring up my wife and say I'll be home early.
Nice you're home so early, Brian.
Jane, there's something I want to tell you.
Yes? Oh, just a minute. I must go and look in the oven.
Glass. Why must women always go into the kitchen when you want to say something to them?
Well, lucky I went. It would have been quite ruined. Oh, by the way, when we have the luncheon thing for dinner, do you think we should have... Oh, I'm sorry. There's something you wanted to say.
It'll keep... Let's discuss the dinner for the Lushingtons.
But that's of no importance. You sounded serious.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, are you sure? The Lushingtons can really wait. They aren't coming for 10 days.
Darling, I'm in a hell of a mess and I don't know what to do.
Oh, not a woman. Not Margaret Verney.
Well, in a sort of a way, it's through her. Oh. A man is blackmailing her and I've been trying to help her. He came to see me. I thought it was about her, but it wasn't. It was about me.
About you? But it's impossible. If there isn't a woman.
Oh, darling, there never has been one, and there isn't one now.
But you've done nothing in your life to be blackmailed for.
It's something I did in a case. Someone's found out and is going to put the screw on me.
But what did you do?
I'll tell you. You remember a man called Moriarty I defended some years ago on a capital murder charge?
Oh, yes, of course. It worried you quite a bit. He was convicted, but at one time you thought he might have been innocent.
Yes, during the case I did. I changed my mind later, but while I was defending him, I really did think that there was a possibility that he hadn't done it.
Is that why he was reprieved?
Perhaps. I don't know.
Well, what did you do which was so awful?
It's no joke, darling, I assure you.
But I can't imagine you breaking the rules or doing anything professional that you knew was wrong.
And that makes it worse. That's probably why I didn't tell you at the time. I knew you believed in me. You won't any longer.
I can't believe it.
I must tell you all the same. I didn't tell you before because I was a coward and I didn't want to lose your good opinion of me. I'm telling you now because I'm a coward and can't fight this thing by myself.
You're not a coward.
I wish I weren't. Even now I'm half frightened to tell you.
Tell me, darling.
It was while Moriarty was being cross-examined. He suddenly came up with something quite new. The counsel for the prosecution was onto him like a shot. When have you ever told anyone that story before, he asked. When, said Moriarty, and I've no doubt to give himself time, repeated, when. Yes, when, repeated counsel. Well, last week, said Moriarty. And whom did you tell last week, asked counsel, with obvious disbelief in his voice. Mr. Cullsworth, said Moriarty. And I got up and said he had.
But he hadn't.
No, he hadn't. I'd only a second or two to decide what I must do. It was at a vital stage of the case. Exactly what my duty was, I'm not quite sure even now. But of one thing, there can be no doubt. I knew it then, and I know it now. What I did was utterly wrong. I lied. My word was accepted by the judge without question. He told the jury that in view of my statement, there was nothing in the point.
Well?
Well, there it is.
Oh, you're not being serious.
I am. I'm not trying to excuse myself when I...
Excuse yourself? What for? When I said you're not being serious, I meant you couldn't think that anyone was blackmailing you for that. It's ludicrous. If it wasn't actually your duty to tell a lie, it's only what most lawyers would have done.
They wouldn't, I assure you. And they most certainly shouldn't.
Well, suppose your client had been hanged because you let him down by telling the truth.
It wouldn't have worried me in the least.
Well, it should have, then. they can hang all right, can they? So long as you and your fellow barristers and all the old judges can stick to the old school rules and drink the old school port.
You don't understand, darling. The reason that lawyers have such a good reputation in this country is because they don't do the things which foreign films make lawyers do.
All right, the standard's a high one. Jolly good. But what does it matter if you fall below it once in a way?
It matters a great deal. Whatever people outside the profession might say or think, I assure you that the benchers of my inn would take a very serious view of the matter indeed if I admitted it. They'd either disbar or suspend me. Either would mean ruin.
Well, that's simple then. Don't admit it. If those stupid old fools would make such a fuss about something which happened years ago, don't tell them. Let them enjoy their port and get on with something that matters. What harm have you done?
I lied to the court and was believed. I've never disclosed the truth, and I've been allowed to practice ever since.
All right, accept that. But what right have you to chuck your whole career away just to satisfy your own conscience?
Because though what I did was inexcusable, at least it was in the heat of the moment and mainly for my client's benefit. To lie now would be in cold blood and solely to save my own skin. I can't do it.
Why need you be asked about it at all?
Two things may happen. This man is quite definitely a blackmailer. He's blackmailing Margaret, and now he's started on me. She's in a spot, and now so am I. I don't.
What is it?
I suppose I might try to persuade her to prosecute.
Then why haven't you advised her to do it before?
She's frightened that if there were a prosecution, somehow or other her husband would find out about it.
And is that likely?
It's possible.
So your suggestion is that she should prosecute with the possibility that her husband will find out in order to save you. Is that it?
I'm afraid it was. I can see it doesn't sound so good.
But you prefer to do that rather than go straight to your benches now and say that an attempt is being made to blackmail you and that there's no truth whatever in the allegations against you?
If Samson's prosecuted for blackmail, I'd have to go into the witness box and commit perjury at his trial.
Well, you've committed perjury already.
No, I haven't. What I said wasn't on oath.
Oh, you mean barristers only have to tell the truth when they're on oath?
No, I don't. No, but you're quite right. Our simple word is accepted by a judge automatically. That's what makes what I did so bad. And I can't add to that by lying first to my benches and then in the witness box. And that brings me to the second thing which may happen.
What's that?
A little while ago, I threw up a case in the middle because my client told a lie.
But darling...
Yes, oh, I know what you're going to say. I've become a bit touchy. Well, it was my duty to do it, but well, you're quite right. Since that lie I told, I have been especially meticulous about my behavior. Over-meticulous, if you like.
But how does all this come in?
Well, I'm being subpoenaed to give evidence for the other side. If they've been tipped off about the Moriarty case, I could be cross-examined about it.
And if you lied?
I'd be all right.
When'll you know if it's going to happen?
Well, not until I'm actually in the witness box. That's what's so terrifying. What am I to do, Jane?
Well, you know what my advice is. Don't go out of your way to lie, but if necessary, lie your head off. It won't be nice, of course. But once it's over, you can get on with your work and forget all about it.
Oh, you make it all sound so easy, but I just couldn't do it. I'm sorry I've let you down, sir.
Oh, don't be silly, darling. Whatever you do, I shan't complain. And anyway, you're not going to be ruined by any blackmailer.
This is Mr. Hamble's chamber.
Yes, sir.
My name is Sampson. You won't know me. Might I have a word?
Come in, sir.
Are you the senior clerk?
Yes.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Brindley.
Oh, how do you know my name?
Well, you took the trouble to put it up outside, although in modestly small letters.
Oh, of course, sir.
Well, how are you, Mr. Brindley?
Mustn't grumble.
Good. I like people who don't grumble. Lots of names you've got on the wall. Do any of them grumble?
Oh, some of the younger ones do if they don't get enough work. Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Sampson? Not from Sampson Musgrove, I suppose.
Musgrove?
No, Mary Vale. I'm always mixing up the names. It's Simmons Musgrove, Sampson Mary Vale.
Oh, most confusing. Nice view you have out of that window.
Yes, it is, isn't it? You want to brief someone in chambers?
Brief someone? I thought you must be a solicitor. Thanks for the compliment, but I'm not.
Well, what can I do for you? If it's insurance, I'm afraid everyone's fixed up here.
Insurance? It's extraordinary how everyone thinks I'm selling insurance. No, it's not insurance. I couldn't sell insurance. And do I look as though I could sell insurance? Now, frankly now, do I look as though I could sell insurance?
Well, what is it then, Mr. Sampson?
I'll tell you a very odd thing.
I've forgotten.
Huh?
I'm terribly sorry, but I really have forgotten. I'll come back again another day when I've remembered. So very sorry to have troubled you. But don't forget.
Forget what?
You mustn't grumble.
What on earth? Out of a loony bin, I suppose.
My name is Samson. You won't know me. Might I have a word?
If you're from the press, I'm afraid I've nothing for you.
What, do you mean to say that you, as a barrister clerk, have never said a word off the record?
Well...
Oh, how rude of me. Please, don't trouble to answer. But as a matter of fact, it wasn't about any particular case I came. I'm really an inquiry agent, but I do a bit of writing on the side. I want to do an article about the bar generally, you know, fees and all that. It's a closed book to most of the public.
Well, I haven't much time, and I don't want to be quoted.
Oh, of course not. Strictly off the record. It's very good of you to talk to me at all. Fees, for example.
What about them?
Well, you can't sue for them. Do you always get paid?
Usually.
Ever do work on spec?
Oh, not likely. It's unprofessional anyway.
Oh, you mean your principal would get into trouble if you took a case on terms no win, no fee?
It's I who'd get into trouble.
But if he knew about it...
Then it wouldn't happen. Anyway, I wouldn't do it.
Of course, there are ways and means. I mean, say, you could take a case for a very low fee and, put it up if you want.
That's just as bad.
But is it never done?
Not here, anyway. You'd have to alter the fee on the brief.
Well, that's easy enough. A new backsheet, for example.
What is all this? You seem to know a good deal. What are you after?
Nothing, except information. Ever raise the fee when you saw the judge was in your favor?
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare.
I'm sorry you're so touchy, but I'm sure that you wouldn't have done any of those things or any of the other things I was going to ask you about, even if you had the chance.
Good morning. There's the door.
Now, do you know, if I were a suspicious person, I should wonder why you suddenly become so unfriendly. But fortunately, I'm not at all suspicious. I never do a thing on suspicion. I want proof. Absolute proof. The documents, you know, or something like that.
Get out!
Oh, but of course, how silly of me not to bring the documents with me.
What documents?
Oh, never mind. They're of very doubtful authenticity, anyway. They'd never stand up in court. At least, I doubt if they would. Well, not at present, anyway. Good morning. So very good of you to have cooperated.
Oh. About this fellow going round the temple.
He called Samson.
That's the chap. A pretty dangerous individual. Lucky you and I have clear consciences. Shouldn't care to be in one or two chaps' shoes. He knows too much.
Yes. Don't pass this on, but I did hear that he'd had a private interview with one of the judges.
What?
And the judge didn't sit again that day.
No.
Went home with a headache or something.
Who was it?
Well, it's only a rumor, you know, and I shouldn't like people to think I pass these things around.
Of course you know me, old boy. I'll keep to myself.
It was old Mowbray.
No.
Yes.
And don't you remember, some years back, as that Jesus baby, thank you, sir.
I don't believe half the stories they tell.
But it's pretty serious for one or two people we both know, I believe.
Yes, it must be pretty awful to be blackmailed. I'm glad I've nothing to worry about.
Well, I don't think I have. But if we all searched our consciences, there are very few of us who wouldn't find something we weren't proud of.
But not enough to be blackmailed for.
Not by itself, but if you embellished it a bit, added a bit here and there, it wouldn't sound so good. But I wouldn't pay. Never.
Some people would have to.
Look, there he is, leaning against the wall, making notes.
I'm going to have it out with him. I've had enough of this. I say, is your name Samson?
Yes, indeed. Yours is Ferndown, I believe, head of the chambers on the ground floor. How do you do?
Are you looking for someone?
Yes and no.
What do you mean by that?
What do you think I mean?
I've no idea.
So you still want to know?
That's why I asked you.
That doesn't follow.
I repeat, it's why I asked you.
I repeat, it doesn't follow. Shall I tell you why it doesn't follow?
No.
Ah, then we're back where we started.
What are you doing here?
The same as the rest of us.
What do you mean by that?
What do you think I mean?
The temple is private property. Have you any legitimate business here?
Have I?
Yes, have you?
You tell me.
If you have no legitimate business here, I shall arrange with the authorities to have you ejected.
Off you go and arrange. Where shall I be when you come back?
I warn you that loitering is not permitted.
What's loitering, may I ask? I'm doing no more than hundreds or thousands of Londoners do every day. What right have you to question my activities?
My clerk saw you making notes outside these chambers.
I dare say he saw you making notes inside them. If you'll show me yours, I might show you mine. I don't promise, mind you, but I might.
What is your business here, sir?
Kindly go back to your lair, sir, or whatever you call the place from which you sprang upon me. I shall make as many notes as I please, and I shall call upon as many people as I please, and lean against as many walls as I please, and I shall not ask your permission, sir, neither by word of mouth, nor by writing, nor by conduct. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, this is the editor speaking. Yes, I'm writing a leader about it. I'm dictating it now. Right. Ready, Miss Barnett?
Yes, sir.
Right. It is said that a blackmailer is going the rounds of the Temple and Lincoln's Inn, threatening to report barristers and their clerks for unprofessional behavior, but offering to refrain on terms.
Just a moment, sir, please. Refrain on terms,
that's right.
Right.
Now, there are few crimes worse than blackmail, but it is seldom possible to blackmail anyone unless he has done something wrong. Got that?
Yes, sir.
The fact that so many people in the law appear to be vulnerable to his despicable mode of attack suggests that the high-sounding phrases about barristers' integrity...
Barristers' integrity...
which are so regularly and sanctimoniously used both by the bar itself and the bench, need perhaps to be reconsidered.
Just a moment, sir, please. Need perhaps to be reconsidered.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If one man can reduce one side of the legal profession to a state of shivering anxiety, is it not time that that side of the profession asks itself if all is well within it?
Mm-hmm. If all is well within it. Yes, sir?
Undoubtedly, this man, whoever he is, should be caught quickly and sent to prison for many years. But when that has been done, the bar should consider what surgical operations may be necessary...
Surgical operations?
...may be necessary mm-hmm. to see that such a state of affairs cannot occur again. That is far more important than the fate of this particular blackmailer and his victims.
He says he's coming for the last time tomorrow.
The last time?
Yes. Oh, what shall I do? Dare I prosecute?
Well, it's a bit difficult for me to advise you. As a matter of fact, I'd like you to prosecute, but...
But, Brian, you speak as though you were personally concerned.
I am, Margaret.
It's my fault.
Not in the least.
Will it help you if I prosecute?
I think it would.
Then I will.
You mustn't do it on my account.
Oh, it's better to risk a prosecution than to have the probability of his telling my husband. Well, what do we do? Go straight to Scotland Yard?
If you'll risk it, yes. And they'll set a trap for him when he comes to see you tomorrow.
All right. I'm ready.
Well, Mrs. Burney, here I am. Sorry to be late, but I've been very busy. Awful lot of people to see.
I quite understand. Come in.
Now, what were we discussing last time I called? To tell you the truth, I've been doing so much since I last saw you that I've almost forgotten what I've been coming to see you about.
I haven't.
Well, that's natural. You've only the one case. I've hundreds. Well, they seem like that. Same with the judge, I suppose. The prisoner remembers the judge, all right, but the judge can't be expected to remember the prisoner. He sees too many of them.
But surely you know.
Charming furniture you have, and pictures... Do you mind if I have a little look round? I say, it's a bit dusty behind this picture. Forgive my saying so. I wonder what those wires are for. Well. Anyone might think you were recording this interview. I can't think why. But you're a busy woman and I'm a busy man. I mustn't keep either of us anymore. I've enjoyed our chat.
Would you mind switching it off, Inspector?
Well, that was hopeless. He obviously suspected a trap from the start.
Now what do we do? And what'll he do?
Yes, Inspector, what happens now?
What about one of the other people in the temple? Do you think any of them will talk?
You could try.
I doubt if we'll get anything. People who are being blackmailed are pretty shy of talking. That's what makes our job so difficult in these cases. What are we going to do if we get nothing?
Well, that's up to you, of course, but I suppose you could interview Samson and put Mrs. Verney's story to him. You might get enough to convict him by questioning him.
That'll be better. We'll go after him straight away. I'm inquiring about a Mr. Samson. I'm inquiring about a Mr. Samson. I'm inquiring about a Mr. Samson.
This is the Crown Hotel. Just one moment, then I'll find out for you.
The police are anxious to interview a Mr. Samson, until recently, when he disappeared, was seen frequently in the vicinity of the temple.
And now at the Crown Hotel.
He might be able to help them in inquiries they are making about a case of blackmail. Mr. Samson is aged about 40.
40?
Of medium height, dark hair, and is rather inclined to comment on the view out of the window. That is the end of the police announcement.
Yes, sir. Though that'll be perfectly all right.
The news will follow in a minute and a quarter.
I'm so sorry, sir, but with you in a moment, I'll just turn down the radio.
That's quite all right, dear lady.
Service will be an adaptation by Henry.
Settle for news.
On his new book,
Blackmailer Disappears. Really?
Adam Bedell and Patrick Barr.
Hunt for Blackmailer? Well, well, well.
And Margaret
Mark. Blackmailer seen in Ipswich.
Mm.
Blackmailer fought in Wales. Welsh Wales, indeed. Blackmailer in Scotland. Scots were hay. Ah, that's better. Nationwide search for blackmailer.
So sorry to have kept you, sir.
Not at all. I was just reading the headlines. Have you got a single room by any chance?
Oh, certainly, sir. For how long?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm having a short holiday. Depends how I like it. Perhaps a fortnight or so.
Oh, well, that'll be quite all right. We're not very busy at the moment, you know. Would you sign the register, please?
Certainly. There. I'd better not mention the view, or you'd be ringing up the police.
Oh, good gracious. Mr. Samson. Oh, it is rather an uncommon name. Oh, well, it must be rather embarrassing for you at the moment.
Well, so far it hasn't been.
Well, I can't see a man who's wanted up and down the country registering in his own name.
Oh, I don't know. That's exactly what I do. Perhaps you'd like me to prove who I really am.
Oh, good gracious. No, sir. No, no, no. Would you like tea in the morning, sir?
Yes, please. I shall be going out quite early, but I'll be back to lunch. Oh, by the way, do you happen to know the names of any solicitors in Settleton?
Well, when I had my little spot of bother, I went to Seaworthy Clipper and Company.
Oh, thank you very much.
Then, Mr. Clipper, he's ever such a kind man.
Please sit down, Mr. Smith. What can I do for you?
The name is Samson, not Smith.
I beg your pardon.
I thought your receptionist might be nervous, so I said Smith, but I'm Samson.
Oh, dear.
Yes, that's right, the one you've been reading about. Nice view you've got out of that window. Hmm? Isn't that the sea?
This isn't the police station, Mr. Samson.
I should hope not. Let them come to me if they want me. Why should I go to them? I've not disguised myself. This is me, Samson in the flesh. The man the police want to interview. All right, I say. Here I am. Let them come to me.
But what can I do for you, Mr. Samson? I don't myself do criminal work, and my partner, Mr. Seaworthy, is away at the moment.
Who said criminal work?
Oh, but blackmail is a crime, a very serious one. Now, Mrs. Weatherstone and Muggeridge in the Heights.
Oh, I dare say they're all right, but I've got flat feet. But I don't want to do any more walking. Besides, I prefer to bring my little bit of business to you.
And what, may I ask, is your little bit of business?
This.
Oh, I don't think we can take your case, Mr. Samson.
Well, you don't know what's in it yet. There.
Oh, dear.
Only newspapers. Don't look so worried.
I don't understand.
Look.
Blackmailer believed to be in hiding. Search in Chester.
Who do you think that refers to?
Well, if you'll forgive me, you.
Have you any doubt of it?
Well, no.
I should not have forgiven you if you'd had any doubt. And these are all the same. I've got 150 of them. All the dailies, all the Sundays, and lots of provincials. And just once more, Mr. Clipper, who do you think they refer to?
You, Mr. Samson.
And you are a reasonable man, Mr. Clipper. As a solicitor, you must be. Now, who would any reasonable man think they refer to?
Well, you.
No doubt at all?
None, I'm afraid.
And what do they describe me as?
Blackmailer, I'm afraid.
But that's a pretty unpleasant thing to say about anyone, isn't it, Mr. Clipper?
Most unpleasant.
Then what do you think the damages will be?
The damages?
But the damages, oh, there won't be any question of damages, I'm afraid. You're bound to go to prison. They might make you pay the cost as well.
You seem to think that I am a blackmailer, Mr. Clipper.
Well, as you ask me, I do.
Why?
Well, oh, this...
Splendid. Now, that's what everyone would say, isn't it? I'm convicted before I'm tried, aren't I?
Oh, no, Mr. Sampson. I assure you, you'll get a perfectly fair trial before you're convicted.
Well, that's very comforting. But just suppose I'm not guilty. Suppose I'm not a blackmailer. What about these newspapers then? People can't say that sort of thing about me if it isn't true, can they? Now, what did you say the damages would be?
You mean if you sued them for libel?
Exactly.
Well, I suppose they'd be large, but only if what they say isn't true.
Tell me, Mr. Clipper, do I look like a blackmailer?
Well, quite frankly, I've never seen one to my knowledge before.
Careful, Mr. Clipper, not careful. You said before. That's calling me a blackmailer. If there'd been someone else present, you'd be for it too now, wouldn't you?
No one else heard it, I assure you.
But of course. And to call a man a blackmailer is quite insulting, isn't it? And it might make me want to hit you on the nose.
Oh.
Now, isn't that conduct likely to provoke a breach of the peace?
Oh, well, really.
Don't worry, Mr. Clipper. I shan't prefer a charge.
Oh, really, sir. I had no intention.
That's quite all right, Mr. Clipper. You're my solicitor. And it wouldn't do anyone any good to put you in the dock. Local solicitor charged, or even local solicitor acquitted wouldn't look good at all now, would it? Now, let's get on with my little matter. I want you to write a letter to all these newspapers.
But surely you ought to give yourself up first.
Give myself up? What for?
For a blip. Alleged blackmail.
But that isn't an offence, Mr. Clipper. Not alleged blackmail, only actual blackmail. Now, why should I give myself up for that if I'm not guilty?
Well, the police have asked you to.
But why should I do what the police ask? I'm not hiding. I'm simply not calling on them.
Then would you mind if I told them where you were?
I most certainly would, Mr. Clipper. I'd come to you in confidence. I should go straight to Messrs. Weatherstone and Muggeridge if you broke that confidence.
What do you
mean? To sue you, I mean. Right? Shall we get on with the letters?
To whom do you wish me to write?
To whom? The whole lot, of course.
And what do you wish me to write?
Well, I'll suggest the effect of the letters, and you can put it into solicitor's language. And perhaps we'd better have your secretary in. Then there will be a third party present.
Oh, yes. Come in, please, Miss Fink. My client's going to draft a letter.
Ready, Mr. Smith.
We have been consulted by our client, Mr. Richard Sampson.
Sampson.
Sampson. Mr. Richard Sampson of... Well, I don't think we'll put in any address for the moment. In regard to a very serious libel published by you about our client in your issue of the... And fill in that according to the newspaper. Our client is amazed that a newspaper of your standing should, without any knowledge of the true facts, publish such a scandalous libel upon our client. Got that?
Yes, sir.
This is calculated to ruin our client, and accordingly, unless you publish with equally large prominence a complete withdrawal and apology within 48 hours of receipt of this letter, proceedings will follow.
Proceedings will follow.
To mark the gravity of the matter, he will also require you to make a substantial payment to charity. Put in any charity you like. As for the amount, put in £1,000 for the nationals and 100 for the provincials.
Oh, but if you want damages, Mr. Sampson, why say a charity?
They won't accept this offer, and it looks better at this stage.
You've never been in the law yourself, I suppose, Mr. Sampson.
No, thank you. Then wind up by saying, proceedings will be taken at once if these terms are not complied with. Got that?
Yes, Mr. Smith. Mr. Sampson, sir.
Right. Oh, one thing, Mr. Clipper. You don't know me, except, shall we say, by reputation. So I thought you might like something on account of your costs. Here's £50 in cash.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'll be back to hear the answers in a few days. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Sampson.
Was Mr. Smith really Mr. Sampson?
Well, I believe so, but we've only got his word for it. It might be a practical joker, I suppose. Oh, why didn't I think of that before? I knew I shouldn't have taken on the case, but he made me. Really, he did. He pretty well blackmailed me.
Oh.
Now, what have I said? Oh, don't repeat that on any account, Miss Pink.
Are you going to tell the police, sir?
No, not at present. As a matter of fact, I think these letters should do the trick. The whole of the press will be down here. They'll soon find him in Scotland Yard, don't. Now, let's get on with them. First of all, make me a list of all these newspapers with their addresses. I think we might have some news for Mr. Sampson.
Well, Mr. Clipper, what new?
Bad, I'm afraid, Mr. Sampson.
Bad? How can it be bad? It's much too soon for it to be bad. Have you had any definite replies yet?
Oh, that's what I meant. We have. It's here. They said that they're amazed at the effrontery of a man who's hiding from the police.
Well, I like that. Who's hiding? Go on. What else?
They suggest that instead of making what they describe as ludicrous demands, you should give yourself up to the police.
But they wouldn't know what to do with me if I did. Anything else?
They add that if you're bold enough to issue a writ, they wish to remind you that your true address must appear on it, and they ask us to make sure that you give a genuine one.
Ah. Is that correct?
Indeed, yes.
Oh. Well, it seems I'll have to see the police a little bit earlier than I expected. And the press, too, I suppose. Where the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered.
Oh.
Never mind. Issue writs against the lot, please, at once. I expect you'd like some money. I come prepared.
Thank you.
But don't look so gloomy, ma'am. Oh. There's no reason why you should lose any sleep.
Can't you sleep, Brian, darling?
Not terribly well.
Nor can I. Let's talk. It's Sampson, isn't it? When's Baker's case coming on?
Heaven knows. He's still in prison and it's slowed things up. This waiting is getting me down.
Do you think they'll catch Sampson?
I expect so. It doesn't make much difference to me what happens to him as far as Baker's case is concerned.
Why not?
Because either he's already given the information to Baker's opponent or he hasn't. If he hasn't, I shall be okay. If he has, I'm finished.
Finished? Because of a couple of criminals, Moriarty and Sampson.
Darling, I've told you before. Look, I simply cannot stand up in the witness box and say I told the truth in the Moriarty case. It'd be a lie. Well, could you?
Good Lord, yes. If your happiness was involved. If I were charged with capital murder, would you give me away rather than tell an untruth?
You could always put up an absurd example to try to prove a point.
Well, if I were charged with a serious motoring offense, would you lie to save me?
On oath?
Oh, what a question. No woman would ask it. She'd lie to the police, to the magistrate, to the judge, to everyone to help her husband, wouldn't you? Save me?
I just don't know. We lawyers have been brought up to regard the truth as sacrosanct as far as we're concerned.
But you don't mean that you expect every barrister or solicitor or judge, for that matter, who say... he's got a jealous wife and has kissed another woman, always to tell his wife the truth about him.
That's a purely personal matter. Well, even then, I should be a bit shocked if I heard, say, Mr. Justice Blank tell a lie to his wife, but professionally, it's automatic for us to tell the truth.
But if I were charged with something, you'd only be acting as my husband, not as a lawyer.
It would be a lie in connection with a case, and every instinct in me would make me revolt at the thought of it.
But what about having an instinct to preserve and help me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to rub it in, but I must say I find it a little hard that you were prepared to lie professionally for a thug like Moriarty and that you wouldn't lie privately for me.
No, that's perfectly fair. I acted disgracefully. It would be nothing like as disgraceful to lie to protect you.
Would you do it then?
I just don't know. Thank the Lord the problem will never arise.
The problem has arisen.
What?
Well, I simply mean that if you ruin yourself, you ruin us at one and the same moment.
That only shows that I behaved abominably. I deserve everything you say. But I can't lie about it again. Good night.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. But whatever happens, I'll be with you. Anyway, I'm sure the police will be able to do something about that horrible man.
I am Inspector Cardew of the Criminal Investigation Department, and this is Detective Sergeant Cole. I believe you have a Mr. Sampson staying here. I'd like to interview him, please.
Oh, yes, we have a Mr. Sampson, but I don't think he's the man you're looking for. He seems a very nice class of gentleman.
Good boy, Inspector. You'd like to have a word with me?
Oh, Mr. Sampson. Then it was you after all.
I said it wasn't, dear lady.
Well, really.
Come to my room, Inspector. It'll be quieter there.
We'd prefer you to come to the police station.
Are you arresting me?
Not at present.
Then the interview is here, or not at all.
Very well, Mr. Sampson. We'll go to your room.
It's along here. Do bring a sort of coat. Do sit down, please. You too, Sergeant Coles. Now, what can I do for you?
Complaints have been laid by a lady called Mrs. Verney that you have been blackmailing her.
I'd like to put her statement to you to see to what extent, if any, you agree with her.
That's fair enough. But let me make this plain at once. I have not been blackmailing her, nor anyone else.
Quite so. Do you agree you have been going to see her?
Yes.
Why?
In the course of business.
What business?
I'm an inquiry agent.
What were you investigating?
Now, you will keep this confidential, Inspector.
Well, that depends, Mr. Sampson. Anything you now say may be used in evidence if you're prosecuted. But if you're not prosecuted, I'll undertake that this information won't go beyond the police and the Director of Public Prosecution's office.
Very well, then. I was employed by her husband, who suspected that she'd been unfaithful to him.
Employed by her husband, sir? But she says that you threatened that unless she paid you at least £100, you'd tell her husband about her.
Oh, no. Money never came into it. Certainly, I'd told her all sorts of things to get information out of her, but I never suggested that she should pay me a penny. After I found out as much as I thought I could, I let on who I was. Well, I think she guessed it anyway.
She says that you told her you'd bought information about her going with a man to the Fisherman's Nook Hotel from an organization which sells such information.
Well, there is something in that. There is an organization which I use when I'm making inquiries, and they do buy information from chambermaids and so forth. Then they sell it to us.
What is this organization? Who runs it?
Ah, that I'm not telling. There's nothing illegal about it, but it's not a nice sort of trade, and they like to remain anonymous.
You've been going round the temple asking questions.
What's wrong with that?
Some of the people resent it.
Well, I don't much care for you coming here and asking me questions. But it's not illegal, so long as you go when I say I've had enough.
What was your object?
I've told you. I'm an inquiry agent, and I was making inquiries.
What about?
That's my business. I told you about Mrs. Verney, and I'm certainly not going further than that.
Why did you run away?
Well, I didn't run away. I wanted a holiday and came here in my own name.
But you must have heard that we wanted to interview you.
Well, of course I did, but I didn't want to interview you.
Why not?
Because, quite frankly, Inspector, I don't like your methods. If I hadn't known my rights, I'd have been in the police station by now, wouldn't I? You really ought to do something about that cough, Sergeant Coates.
Just one more thing. You say quite definitely that you were employed by Mrs. Verney's husband.
Certainly.
No doubt about it at all?
No doubt whatever. Go and ask him.
We will.
Right. Oh, one thing, Inspector.
Yes?
Remember me to Mrs. Verney?
Mrs. Verney, we've seen the man. He says he's an inquiry agent employed by your husband.
What? Oh, that can't possibly be true.
Why are you so sure?
Because Samson knows about the Fisherman's Nook. And if Edward knew, he'd have acted long ago.
We were proposing to go and see your husband.
Oh, no, for God's sake, you can't do that. Now, you promised me you'd help me when I came to you. That would be ruining me.
You must see the case from our point of view, Mrs. Verney. If, as we believe, the man is lying when he says your husband employed him, we have enough evidence to convict him. Or at any rate, to put him on trial.
And ruin my life. I don't mind whether he goes to jail or not. I want to keep my husband.
But, Mrs. Verney, suppose Samson is telling the truth. Then a prosecution will be quite hopeless.
If he's telling the truth, I'm telling you lies. Do you think I am?
Certainly not. I can see no reason why you should.
Go to Mr. Caldworth if you doubt me. But I beg of you not to tell my husband. Please, please promise me you won't.
Well, it doesn't lie in my hands entirely, madam, but we'll report what you have said. But one way or another, I'm going to get Mr. Sampson.
Well, Mr. Sampson, so far, so good. I don't think you are going to be prosecuted yet.
And what do you mean by that, Mr. Clapper?
Well, as you know, all the newspapers you joined together and instructed the same firm of solicitors.
Well?
They put in a defense in which they say that you are a blackmailer.
But that's fine. It'll increase the damages, won't it? But why don't you think I'll be prosecuted at present?
Because up to now, they've plainly tried to delay matters, and it was obvious that they were waiting for the Director of Public Prosecutions to prosecute you and do their work for them. Suddenly, they've stopped their delaying tactics and are trying to bring the action to trial as soon as possible.
I see. Well, that suits me, doesn't it?
I hope so. In other words, the director is going to see what happens in your action. If you win, you'll be quite safe.
And if I lose, as you think I will, they'll arrest me. Is that it?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
And why do you think I lose?
Oh, need we go into that?
Well, no, not if it's because you yourself don't believe me. But is there anything else?
Well, there is. It's rather curious, really.
What curious?
It's about Edward Verney. From what the other side solicitors have told me, I believe they haven't interviewed him. And that's why you're not being prosecuted yet.
Why shouldn't they interview him?
Because if you were not employed by him, in other words, if you're a blackmailer and Mrs. Verney is telling the truth and you aren't, they'd be betraying her confidence to her husband. And one thing the police don't like doing is doing the blackmailer's work for him. No one would come to them at all if they were going to be given away.
Well, I see that. But what's that got to do with your believing me guilty?
Well, you won't let me go and see Edward Verney either. And I cannot see any, forgive me, any honest reason why you won't let me go to interview him.
But I told you, he's touchy about it. He's promised to come to give evidence for me, provided he's not worried by his solicitors and all that.
Oh, but just one interview, 5 minutes only, even less, or one letter from him.
But what would a letter mean? You don't know his signature. I could write it myself.
Oh, that's very true. Then just a short interview.
No. I know my man. You told me his evidence is vital to me. I agree. I want to be sure that we get it.
But we could subpoena him. He'd have to come.
He could go abroad, Mr. Clipper.
Oh, yes.
No, Mr. Clipper. You must trust me. I know you don't like that word when I'm concerned, but after all, would I be such an idiot as to lead you up the garden? Now, what would I possibly gain by that?
Time, Mr. Sampson. Time. You may be going abroad, too, when your arrangements are complete.
I like your frankness, Mr. Clipper. Always have. But your suspicions are ill-founded. Edward Verney will be in court just as certainly as I shall, and I'm glad it'll be soon. And then I'll answer the questions you haven't thought of.
Mr. Sampson, let me ask you this. Did you listen to your learned counsel, Mr. Felsham's opening of this case?
I did, Mr. Dawson.
No doubt you heard him say that he was calling you to give evidence to say that you were employed by a gentleman his lordship allowed to be called Mr. X.
I did.
But he didn't mention that he was calling Mr. X to corroborate your story.
No, he said nothing about Mr. X giving evidence.
A pretty important witness.
So I was told.
Vital to your case.
That's for the jury to say.
I can't imagine that anyone as experienced as my learned friend, Mr. Felsham, would have omitted to tell the jury by accident that Mr. X was being called by you as a witness.
I'm quite sure he wouldn't do anything by accident. I have the greatest confidence in Mr. Felsham. More, I should say, than he has in me.
Well, you said it, Mr. Sampson. May I ask why?
Certainly. It's the reason why he never said anything in opening my case about Edward... I'm so sorry. Mr. X coming here. I told him he would be coming, but he didn't believe me. So he waited to see what happened.
May I ask what has happened? Are we to have the privilege of seeing Mr. X in the witness box?
Certainly. He's sitting down there. Huh? Third row from the back.
I am informed.
I shall rise now. If there's any more of this noise in the morning, I shall have the court cleared.
Well, Dorset, old boy, now that you've seen Edward Verney in court, how about paying me, say, £100,000?
My dear Felsham, while I can't pretend I'm as happy about the case as I was, I don't believe in surrendering just because of one damaging blow.
As you like, old boy, but in the morning that one damaging blow is going to be followed by a knockout. Once Verney gives evidence, you've had it.
He might be run over by a bus.
Funny you should say that.
Why?
My own client, Mr. Sampson, suggested the same about Mrs. Verney.
Not really.
Well, he says he was only joking, but I wasn't so sure at the time. He even suggested that we might pay Mrs. Verney to disappear.
Joking again, I suppose.
Oh, exactly.
But why are you telling me all this?
To show the strength of Sampson, old boy. I'll grant you that up till that final answer of his just now, I had, as he said, no faith in him at all. But now we've got Edward Verney, your clients have had it well and truly.
He hasn't given evidence yet. You can't tell what he'll say.
I've assigned proof of his evidence.
Then why on earth didn't you say so in opening the case?
My client could have written the proof himself for all I knew. Until I saw Mr. Edward Verney in the flesh, I was keeping my silly mouth shut. Want to settle? My price will go up after I've called him.
Well, I can't pretend I like the position, but I don't think my newspaper clients will give in at this stage, having gone so far.
Okay. See you in the morning. Oh, there's Cosworth. I want to have a word with him. I'm told he'll be giving evidence in an action in a day or two. You know what it's all about.
Yes, he threw up a case in the middle or something. Now he's been subpoenaed by his former opponent.
Thank heaven, Jane, the case is on. These months must have been hell for you. Oh, if only we knew what I was going to be asked. If only. I'm sorry, darling. I've asked the same question 1,000 times. More. I sleep on it, dream on it, live on it. Oh, isn't there tomorrow?
What sort of witness was Baker?
Excellent. 6 months inside must have done him good. I must confess, I believed him. Except that he never told me about the supposed interview in the public house. It looks bad for me. If they can break me down, Baker wins. I'm the only card the defendant's got left. Have they got a Moriarty to trump me with? Talking of trumps, it's extraordinary about Samson, isn't it? Looks as if he's going to win.
Do you really think so?
Well, I confess I haven't thought much about his case, only about mine, but it's very odd. I'd have guaranteed that Margaret Verney was telling the truth. Well, I still feel it. I simply can't believe that what she told me didn't happen exactly as she told it to me. Well, it must have. Yet if Edward Verney says he knew all about the fisherman's nook, she must have been lying. Well, we'll see. By Jove, that was a change.
What?
Well, for a moment I stopped thinking about my case and was only thinking of Samson.
Mr. Felsham, call the next witness, please.
I'll call Mr. X, my lord. Mr. X, please. Call him outside, please, Usher. He knows he's to be called Mr. X. Would your lordship forgive me a moment?
What is it, Mr. Clipper?
A note from Mr. Blandy.
What's it say?
Dear Mr. Sampson, I'm so sorry that after all I should not be able to help you at your trial. I have been called abroad suddenly.
What?
I'm so sorry, and hope it won't inconvenience you too much. Thank you so much for your help. Yours sincerely, Edward Verney.
You heard that, Mr. Sampson?
What happens now, Mr. Felcher?
You lose the case, Mr. Sampson.
Forgive me, my lord. I want to show this to my learned opponent.
Dorset, will you let me put this in?
Dear boy, I will not. Want to settle now? I'll give you sixpence. Make it ninepence.
Oh. My lord.
Yes, Mr. Felsham?
The plaintiff has no further evidence to call.
Very well. Yes, Mr. Dorset.
May it please your lordship. Members of the jury, my learned opponent has just shown me a piece of paper said to contain the explanation of Mr. X's absence here today. But how do we know that it was Mr. X who was here yesterday? We only have Mr. Sampson's word for it. Members of the jury, I venture to suggest to you that Mr. Sampson knew he could never call Mr. X. I am not going to detain you further, members of the jury. I shall let Mrs. X tell her own story. We are only mouthpieces. Nothing that we say is evidence. What you require is the sworn testimony, not of someone who is here today and gone tomorrow, but of someone who is here today and tomorrow's morrow, if need be. Call Mrs. X.
Well, now, Mr. Sampson, have you had enough? I assure you that when you're prosecuted, as undoubtedly you will be, you're liable to get a heavier sentence for forcing Mrs. Verney into the box.
No one's forcing her, Mr. Felcher.
Don't be ridiculous. You are. If you give up now, she won't have to be called as a witness. You're bound to lose anyway. Why put her through this ordeal?
You don't like me, do you, Mr. Felcher?
I do not. But if you were my closest friend, I'd give you the same advice.
If you were my closest friend, I hope you wouldn't appear for me. You'd be as prejudiced in my favor then as you're prejudiced against me now.
Mere abuse.
Come along, Mr. Dorset. Let the witness come into the box.
Would your lordship forgive me a moment?
I say, Milton, we've just had this. A letter from Margaret Verney. I'm dreadfully sorry about this, but something wonderful has just happened. My husband suddenly said that if I'd go away with him at once, he'd try to forget the other woman. I just had to go. I'm so very sorry, but I'm sure you realize that for me it is my whole life, while yours is only a case. By the time you get this, I shall be in the air. I am already treading on it. With so many regrets and thanks, Margaret Verney.
Bad luck, old boy.
My lord, might I apply for an adjournment to get in touch with the witness who has flown abroad?
Any objection, Mr. Felsham?
No, my lord. I sympathize with my learned friend in his misfortune.
Do you indeed, Mr. Felsham? How good of you. It's very inconvenient to members of the jury, but in the circumstances, I see no alternative but to adjourn.
This is Springfield and Company, solicitors of London.
Spring,
sir? Springfield of London, England.
Do you wish to book a room? Come in, solicitor.
I want to speak to Mrs. Verney, please.
Mrs. Verney, please.
Well, Mr. Briggs, at any rate, she's staying there.
Good.
Has your paper got a representative there?
I think so, but what are you going to say to her?
What I think. That might cut me off. Hello?
Yes, this is Springfield and Co.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Yes, I dare say. When are you coming back?
Well, I didn't spend the year. Not the years, anyway.
Wait, can we take your evidence abroad?
I'm afraid not. I just want to forget the whole affair.
Well, I hope you realize you left the defendants in the cart.
I'm most awfully sorry. But look, if you're a married man in love with your wife, surely you can understand.
Say that for me, too. We'll have to pay, I suppose. But I'm damned if my paper will make an apology.
Well, Mr. Sampson, I owe you an apology.
Much more than that, Mr. Clipper. £100,000, I think they said they'd pay. You owe me that.
As soon as it comes, Mr. Sampson, you shall have it. And if you think that at any time I've shown a lack of confidence in your case, I do.
My dear Mr. Clipper, £100,000 will wipe out the memory of it forever. I'm most grateful to you for your help.
Yes.
Now, I wonder if you can tell me where Mr. Leslie Baker's case is being heard.
Well,
I'd like to see the end of that. Particularly Mr. Culsworth's evidence. We've had the main dish and the sweet. Now for the savory. I'd like to think of the hound being chased by the fox in the witness box.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give to the court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
And oh, God, it's got to be.
Is your full name Brian Culsworth? Do you live at 11 Hilton Rise, M.W.? And are you one of Her Majesty's counsel?
Yes.
You appeared for the plaintiff at his first trial. His counsel on this trial has agreed to your saying what took place between you. Did Mr. Baker ever tell you of a conversation he had with the defendant after the litigation had started?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Culsworth.
Mr. Panther, perhaps you would start your cross-examination before we adjourn?
If your lordship pleases. Mr. Culsworth, I suppose you think it's a pretty serious thing to throw up a case in the middle?
Well, God, I don't like this. Yes, of course.
You acted on the spur at the moment, didn't you?
Oh, God, he's leading up to it. Not exactly on the spur of the moment. I was not on my feet.
Then you recognize you might make a mistake on the spur of the moment.
Well, yes. It's nice of him to call it a mistake, but I can't. This is it. But there must be a few more questions first. Yes, one could make a mistake.
And you didn't have much time in the present case to think about it.
No.
Couldn't you have taken a little longer to decide? After all, the man was your client. There might have been a mistake. We all make mistakes, don't we?
Of course.
Have you never, in the course of a case, said something too quickly and it turned out to be wrong?
Yes. That's an odd way of putting it. Yes, certainly.
Then please ask me if I've always corrected it.
Now, I would like to put this question to you.
Yes, I knew it. He was bound to.
Please don't think I mean to be offensive.
Of course not. This is Panther's way. He's going to make me convict myself or lie. What a perfect way of cross-examining a colleague.
Don't you think you could have been wrong in the present case?
I could have been, I suppose, but I wasn't.
This is better. Can he possibly be leading to something quite different?
But isn't a mistake more likely to be made if you act so quickly?
I suppose so.
Dad, this is wonderful. He can't be leading to Moriarty.
So in the present case, you were more likely to make a mistake than if you'd thought about it for longer.
Yes.
So you could have made a mistake.
He
isn't on Moriarty. He can't be, or he'd have come to it this time, surely.
I could, but I didn't.
Now, let us see. Your client said in evidence that at an interview at a public house after the writ had been issued, the defendant impliedly admitted his liability, didn't he?
Yes.
He also said, didn't he, that he didn't attach much importance to it, as he was the only person who heard it.
Yes.
Was that quite reasonable for him, in your view?
Well, not unreasonable.
So that it was the sort of thing he might either not mention or not stress.
I suppose so.
Or he might mention one part of it and not mention the other.
How do you mean?
Well, as he attached little or no importance to the matter, he might have casually mentioned that he saw the defendant in a public house, but not have said what happened. After all, his attitude of mind was, it's word against word. If I'm not believed on the original promise, I shan't be believed about this either, so what does it matter? Well, that's reasonable, isn't it?
Yes, I should say so.
Now, if your client had only said to you that he'd seen the defendant in a public house without telling you about the conversation, that would have made no impression on you at all, would it? It would have been, completely immaterial.
Yes, that is so.
So that if all the plaintiff said to you was that, you might well either not have registered it, or you might have forgotten it.
Yes, that's possible.
Well, then you can't swear, can you, that the plaintiff did not tell you that he'd seen the defendant in a public house?
No, I can't swear he didn't say just that.
Let us assume, then, that he did say it. After all, he swears that he did say it, and you cannot swear that he did not. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, if he did say simply that he'd seen the defendant in the public house, it's not unreasonable that as he did mention the one fact, he might have thought he mentioned the other fact, too.
Yes, that's fair.
Well, if that's fair, don't you think you were a little hasty in throwing up the case, as in effect you did? Your client may well have told you half the story, and thought that he'd told you the whole story. Well, nothing dishonest about that, is there?
Oh, nothing at all.
Then I repeat, don't you think that you may have done your client an injustice?
I think you're probably right. That may well be what happened. I owe my client a profound apology. I acted too quickly. He may well have believed he'd told me about the interview, even though he hadn't.
Jane, it's me. It's all right. It's all right.
Oh, darling, how wonderful.
I'll tell you all about it when I get home, but I had to ring you.
Oh, I'm so happy. What happened to Mr. Baker?
He won easily. Meet me for dinner.
I can't wait.
Darling.
And what happened to Mr. Sampson?
Just £100,000.
£100,000?
£100,000, what we went for. And don't worry, I brought your share. Now, where is that husband of yours?
Edward's coming back in a minute. We must celebrate.
Well, I mustn't stay, but, oh, my goodness, it's nice to be able to talk to you again without acting all the time.
Yes, but
Scotch, Mrs. Verney.
Scotch, Mr. Sampson. But Edward was quite right. Unless we had acted everything from start to finish as though we were perfect strangers, I'd never have convinced Brian Culswell.
Oh, never. Here you are.
Thanks. Do you know, I really lived that part. I almost felt that what I told him was true. Well, it was, of course. I mean, literally. It needed something like that to make it seem genuine to him. He's not a fool.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
It's amazing what we've done from that one piece of information we've learned about Cuswell.
I'll say cheers.
Cheers. We've taught him that he mustn't break the rules. We've made £100,000. And we've taught the newspapers that you can't call an incident blackmail or murder or whatever you think it is until someone's been convicted of it.
Well, you can. But I agree, we've shown it can be expensive if you do. Very expensive.
In Unlawful Occasions, adapted by Henry Cecil from his new novel, the part of Richard Sampson was played by Alan Burdell and Margaret Verney by Catherine Dolan. Brian Cullsworth, QC, was played by Patrick Barr, Jane Cullsworth by Marjorie Mars, and Digby, his clerk, by Will Layton. Mr. Clipper was played by James Thomason, Miss Pink, his secretary, by Sean Davis, and Inspector Cardew by John Baddeley. Mr. Leslie Baker was played by Leslie Perrins, Mr. Justice Reddish by Rolf Lefevre, and Mr. Panter by George Curzon. Mr. Ferndown was played by George Merritt, the editor, Arthur Gomez, Mr. Dorset, Charles Simon, Mr. Felsham, Anthony Vickers, Mr. Hopkins, Jonathan Scott, Mr. Brinley, Earl Grey, and the hotel receptionist by Elizabeth Morgan. The recorded production was by H.B. Fortine.